So, right now, you probably have a device sitting in your living room that can, instantly summon over 1 million hours of global entertainment.
Oh, easily, yeah.
Right. I mean, you have access to more cinema, more documentaries, more serialized dramas than a king could have dreamed of a century ago.
Absolutely.
And statistically speaking, having all of that at your fingertips is probably the exact reason you find yourself sitting on the couch feeling completely miserable.
It's so
You
true.
know the feeling. You grab the remote, fire up the screen, and you just scroll. You pass the trending row, you dig into those bizarrely specific, obscure
Who
categories.
loves that make no sense, right?
Exactly. And suddenly 45 minutes bleed away. You've watched, I don't know, a dozen autoplaying trailers that just spike your heart rate, and you end up turning the thing off in total frustration.
Yeah, you have an entire universe of media on demand, and you spend the evening watching absolutely nothing.
Nothing at all.
It is really, I mean, it's the defining irony of our digital age, isn't it? We
Yeah.
built this incredible technological marvel, this infinite library of babble just for our leisure time.
Right.
But the primary user experience has become pure, unadulterated decision fatigue. Like, we are drowning in content, but completely starving for actual entertainment.
Yeah, that modern friction is the foundation for today's deep dive. We are exploring a highly practical, surprisingly hilarious, and honestly pretty profound guide to surviving this streaming era.
By hunting down actual wholesome family entertainment.
Exactly. And our source for this journey is a fantastic piece from the Beaver County Almanac.
The voice behind this article is really what makes it so compelling. It's written by an author who just goes by Grandpa Jim.
Grandpa Jim, I love that.
Yeah, and he proudly holds the official printed title of Curmudgeon in residence at the Almanac.
That title alone just tells you so much about his perspective. I mean, Grandpa Jim has essentially appointed himself as the director, the entire administrative staff, and like the principal research subject of his own personal Department of Wholesome Family Entertainment.
He really has.
Okay, let's unpack this. Jim's mission is wonderfully specific here. He sets out to find classic, straightforward television for under 25 bucks a month.
Which is a challenge today.
Oh, totally. He wants to construct an escape hatch from the modern onslaught of, dystopian thrillers and hyper-anxious streaming dramas.
Right. And to understand why he so desperately wants that escape hatch, we kind of have to look at how Jim views the evolution of television technology.
Oh, this part is great.
Yeah, he points out that there was a long period in our history when watching TV required zero technical knowledge. You walked into the room and you turned a dial.
And if the screen stayed black, you didn't reboot a router. You didn't check your broadband speed. You just sat down and waited for the physical glass vacuum tubes inside the actual wooden television cabinet to physically heat up.
Right. And if the picture started rolling, you didn't have to navigate through like three nested menus to adjust the aspect ratio. You just walked up and adjusted a physical knob.
A physical knob, imagine. And if the reception was truly terrible, you initiated the ultimate family troubleshooting protocol.
Oh, yes.
You sent the youngest kid in the house out the back door and up onto the roof to manually rotate the metal antenna.
While someone is standing in the living room screaming through an open window, "There! Stop! Don't breathe!"
Don't breathe! Exactly.
Jim argues, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, that this was the absolute peak of Americans' home entertainment technology.
Sure.
He contrasts that tactile, straightforward era with what we generously call progress today.
Right.
Like, you have a TV that can pull hundreds of thousands of programs from servers across the globe. Yet Jim finds that for a guy over 50, and especially for someone trying to host his young grandchildren in the living room, there was often absolutely nothing safe or satisfying to put on the screen.
It really makes me think of like walking into a giant million square foot mega supermarket because you just want to buy a simple loaf of white bread to make a sandwich.
Yeah.
But when you get to the bakery aisle, there are like 400 different types of artisanal sourdough.
And they all look complicated.
Right. They are infused with truffles. They're topped with ancient grains you can't even pronounce. They cost 12 bucks a loaf. And the labels are practically in Latin.
Exactly.
You get so overwhelmed by the sheer volume of these complicated, high-stakes choices that your brain just gives up. You leave the store completely empty-handed and hungry.
What's fascinating here is that you're touching on the actual mechanism behind the paradox of choice. When you give a human being too many options, it actually doesn't increase their satisfaction.
Yeah.
Psychologically, evaluating hundreds of choices burns a massive amount of glucose in the prefrontal cortex.
Wow, really?
Yeah, your brain actually experiences cognitive strain trying to weigh the pros and cons of 50 different shows. That strain leads directly to anxiety, which causes decision paralysis.
Makes total sense.
Your brain's default defense mechanism is simply to opt out. But, you know, Jim, frustration isn't just about the cognitive load of having too many choices. It's about the fundamental nature of the content being offered.
Because he is incredibly clear about what he does not want invading his living room.
Very clear. He specifically lists out his anti-preferences. He isn't looking for the newest serialized dystopian thriller.
Nope.
He has zero interest in serial killers. He doesn't want to watch drug cartels.
Understandable.
He is entirely uninterested in zombies. And he makes a very pointed note that he doesn't want to watch television teenagers who seem to have learned considerably more about human sexuality than they have about basic algebra.
He just wants Perry Mason. He wants Gunsmoke. He wants Leave It to Beaver. I mean, he's looking for an old Cary Grant movie where the absolute biggest existential threat facing Western civilization is the distinct possibility that Cary Grant might accidentally marry the wrong woman.
Notice the shift in stakes there, though.
Yeah.
The stakes in modern prestige television are constantly dialed up to a catastrophic level.
It's the end of the world, basically.
Exactly. The collapse of society, the darkest, most irredeemable depths of the human psyche. Jim is actively hunting for stakes that are manageable.
Right.
He wants a narrative where problems are constrained to a single location and where they are inevitably solved within 45 minutes, usually by a reasonable person having a calm conversation.
So Jim has drawn a very clear boundary around the kind of content he wants, but how does he actually get it without spending a fortune?
Right.
That brings us to his $25 a month budget challenge. We really need to look at the actual services he investigated, because his first major discovery completely undercuts the premise. You don't even need the full 25 bucks.
Yes. Not at all. His research uncovered a whole tier of niche services. The first one he highlights is called Friendly TV.
Friendly TV.
Yeah. And Jim, playing the role of the curmudgeon in residence perfectly, makes sure to complain that the name is unfortunately spelled without any vowels in that modern startup style.
Right. Friendly. It is a bit ironic for a service entirely dedicated to preserving the past.
It really is. But, putting the spelling aside, the economics of it are remarkable. For about $11 a month, their classic package provides over 50 channels.
Wow.
We are talking about networks like MeTV, FETV, GetTV, Story Television, and the Hallmark Channel.
Okay.
Jim describes the catalog by saying, quote, "This is television for people who remember when detectives solved murders while wearing suits."
Detectives in suits. That imagery alone provides a sense of narrative stability. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
When the detective is wearing a perfectly tailored suit and a tie to a crime scene, you implicitly understand the rules of the universe you're watching.
Everything is under control.
Exactly. Order will be restored. Plus, Friendly TV includes an unlimited cloud DVR. Jim knows that you can use this feature to essentially construct your own highly curated private television network consisting solely of classic shows.
Completely insulated from the modern algorithmic feed.
Yes. Now, for viewers who require even stricter guardrails regarding what might pop up on their screen, Jim investigated another hidden bargain called Great American PureFlix.
Right.
It runs about $10 a month, and it is explicitly marketed for faith and family-friendly entertainment.
And before we go further, I just want to clarify something for you listening. When we look at Jim's notes on services like PureFlix or his desire for 1950s television, it's really important to understand that Jim isn't necessarily trying to make a sweeping political statement here.
No, not at all.
He isn't trying to draft you into a culture war. He is simply expressing a deep, visceral exhaustion with the unpredictability of modern media. He specifically says this service is perfect for grandparents who are terrified of having to explain, you know, some unexpected development in contemporary culture to a 7-year-old.
Exactly. He just wants a controlled environment where he doesn't have to keep a finger nervously poised over the remote control's mute button.
The poised finger on the remote. I mean, that is the perfect visual representation of modern media anxiety.
It really is.
The key takeaway from Jim's research into these niche services is that they aren't just selling a catalog of old content. They are selling a specific emotional environment.
Right.
When you subscribe to Friendly or PureFlix, the value proposition isn't we have the most expensive cutting-edge prestige drama. The value proposition is you can fall asleep on your couch with the TV running, and you will not wake up to a graphic, high-definition zombie apocalypse.
And no jump scares.
Exactly. They are promising psychological safety.
So Jim has found this perfectly safe, anxiety-free content. But to actually watch classic television on a massive mainstream platform like Amazon Prime, he finds himself forced to navigate a user interface that is deliberately engineered to cause a completely different type of anxiety.
Oh, the financial traps.
The financial traps. Mm-hmm. Because if you already pay for Amazon Prime for the two-day shipping, Prime Video comes bundled with it. And Jim acknowledges that Amazon Res Vault is incredibly deep. They have the heavy hitters of classic television.
Oh, the catalog is massive. They've got The Rifleman, The Beverly Hillbillies, Family Affair, My Favorite Martian, The Saint. It's a goldmine.
Total goldmine. But Jim warns that accessing that goldmine requires walking through a labyrinth designed to confuse you at every turn.
Jim describes Amazon's ingenious system.
Yeah.
You know, you spend 20 minutes searching through the menus. You finally discover a movie you've been wanting to watch for 30 years.
Right.
You go to the kitchen, you make yourself a snack, you get comfortable on the couch, dim the lights, and you press the play button. That is the exact microsecond. Amazon informs you that the movie you thought was included in your subscription actually costs an additional $3.99 to rent.
It's infuriating. It's like going to an all-inclusive resort for your vacation, you know, walking up to the massive buffet and realizing that half the food has invisible tripwires.
Yes.
The moment you put a dinner roll on your plate, your credit card gets charged $4. The entire interface is engineered to blur the line between the free buffet and the premium menu.
Or, even worse, they trick you into a 7-day free trial.
Oh, don't get me started.
For some obscure third-party channel you've never heard of, which you agreed to just to get the movie to start.
Just to make the screenplay.
Exactly. And then you completely forget to cancel it until you notice a strange charge on your bank statement in the year 2029.
Jim's golden rule for surviving the Amazon interface is to train your eyes to ignore the giant movie posters and look exclusively for the tiny text that says, included with Prime. If it doesn't explicitly say that, you are stepping on a tripwire. Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Jim points out the ultimate irony of modern streaming on these big platforms.
On the ads.
Prime now includes advertising right in the middle of your shows unless you pay them an extra fee every month to remove them.
It's crazy.
We spent decades cutting the cord, fighting to liberate ourselves from traditional cable TV commercials by paying a premium for subscription services. Now we have completed the circle. We are paying a monthly fee for the privilege of watching commercials.
To understand how we ended up back where we started, you really have to look at the underlying economics of the streaming industry.
Let's hear it.
A decade ago, Silicon Valley unbundled the cable package. They subsidized the cost of streaming with billions in venture capital to acquire as many customers as possible, offering massive libraries for a flat $8 or $9 a month.
The golden age.
Right. But eventually, Wall Street demanded profitability. The cost of customer acquisition, the astronomical licensing fees for back catalogs, and the expense of running these global server farms meant the math just no longer worked.
So they had to pivot.
Yeah. The platforms were bleeding money, so they had to introduce ad-supported tiers. They had to start rebundling services.
It's wild. We dismantled the old cable bundle because we didn't want to pay for 500 channels we never watched. Now we have 6 different subscriptions, 6 different confusing interfaces. We're paying just as much, and we still have to watch unskippable ads for car insurance.
Which is exactly why Grandpa Jim had to invent a master strategy to outsmart the algorithms and the billing cycles. She developed a system he calls subscription crop rotation.
Subscription crop rotation. I genuinely think this might be the most practical piece of advice in the entire deep dive.
It really is.
So how does the crop rotation actually work in practice?
Well, Jim correctly identifies that if you try to subscribe to Paramount Plus to get the CBS archives and Peacock to get the NBC vault and Hallmark for the movies all at the exact same time,
you're broke.
You end up paying $80 a month. You've literally just rebuilt your old cable bill.
Right.
So the crop rotation strategy requires keeping one inexpensive service permanently. Jim uses Friendly TV as his anchor. Then you treat the big streamers like seasonal crops.
You rotate
them month by month. You subscribe to Paramount Plus for 30 days. You binge all the Andy Griffith episodes you can handle. And then you brutally, unapologetically cancel it.
I love that.
The following month, you spin up PureFlix.
You just cycle through them. And Jim has a very specific, hilarious rule for how to handle the Hallmark streaming service.
Yes, the Christmas rule.
He advises that you subscribe right around Christmas, which is the time of year when, apparently, every successful corporate woman in America is legally required to leave the big city, return to her snowy hometown, meet a rugged, widowed Christmas tree farmer, save the struggling family bakery from foreclosure, and discover what really matters in life.
It is the ultimate, comforting, predictable narrative arc.
Every single time. But the crucial part of Jin's rule: once the corporate executive successfully saves the bakery, you must explicitly cancel the subscription in January. Do not let it roll over into February.
It requires active management, but it completely defeats the business model of these massive tech companies.
It really does.
Their revenue projections rely heavily on passive subscribers. You know, people who sign up, watch one show, and then forget they are paying $15 a month for the next 2 years.
Guilty as charged.
Right. But Jim is taking back control of the billing cycle. He also points out that you don't actually have to pay anything at all if you're willing to compromise on the delivery method. There are completely free ad-supported options out there. Services like Pluto TV, Tubi, and the Roku channel. They hold massive collections of older movies and television.
Wait. If the curmudgeon in residence hates modern media so much, how does he feel about sitting through endless commercial breaks on Pluto TV? Because we just complained about Amazon forcing ads on us.
This is where Jim actually flips the script. It's so interesting. He has a remarkably warm, nostalgic take on commercials, provided he isn't paying a subscription fee to watch them.
Oh, okay.
He says they don't bother him much on the free services because he grew up with them. In his view, the commercial break actually served a vital structural purpose in the household.
How so?
Well, it wasn't just an ad for laundry detergent. It provided the necessary synchronized interval for getting a bowl of ice cream from the kitchen or visiting the bathroom without pausing the tape.
Or, as he perfectly describes it, it gave you 3 minutes to ask your father what the news anchor Walter Cronkite meant when he used the word quagmire on the evening broadcast.
Exactly. The commercial break was a shared cultural pause.
Yeah.
It was a moment of family interaction built directly into the broadcast schedule. It allowed the people in the room to process what they were watching together rather than just staring silently at an endless, uninterrupted feed.
That is a brilliant reframe for you listening right now. Like, think about how you can apply this crop rotation and this mindset to your own digital life.
Absolutely.
We don't have to be passive consumers, just letting autopay drain our wallets while we scroll endlessly in a state of decision fatigue. Mm-hmm. We can actively rotate our subscriptions.
We can take control.
Exactly. We can utilize the free services and choose to view the commercial breaks not as an annoyance, but as a built-in chance to put the phone down, talk to the person next to us, or just get off the couch and stretch.
Yeah.
It is a mechanism to save money and massively reduce that overwhelming digital friction.
It's highly empowering. But as we look at all these practical budgeting tips and platform hacks, we really need to shift gears and look at the deeper meaning behind Jim's quest.
Mm-hmm.
Because he isn't going through all this effort just to save $15 a month. There is a philosophical core to why these specific older television shows are so deeply comforting to him and to millions of other viewers who seek them out.
So let's set the scene of what that world actually looks like on screen. When you watch these hidden classics, you are entering a very distinct, stylized universe.
You really are.
Jim describes the aesthetic perfectly. The sets are visibly wobbly.
Yeah.
The cars driving down the street are absolutely enormous. Medical doctors actually make house calls, walking right into your living room with a black leather bag. Practically everyone is smoking cigarettes indoors. Children address every adult strictly as Mr. Mrs.
Oh, always.
And husbands come home from the office wearing a tailored suit and a literal fedora.
And crucially, regarding the plot lines, Jim points out that a television family in this era can survive an entire 24-episode season without a single character discovering a dark, traumatic secret about someone else's hidden identity.
Okay, so what does this all mean? Let me play devil's advocate here for a second, because this is where a lot of people push back on nostalgia.
Yeah.
Isn't retreating into a sanitized 1950s sitcom fantasy where everyone wears a suit and there are no real-world systemic problems, like, just an unhealthy form of denial? Are Jim and his viewers just sticking their heads in the sand to avoid dealing with the actual complex reality of the world?
That is the most common critique of nostalgic media, for sure. And Jim anticipates it perfectly.
Does he?
He completely acknowledges the unreality of the shows he loves. He isn't delusional about history.
Hmm.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, he writes, and this is a direct quote from his article, Nobody says those programs represented America exactly as it was. They represented America partly as it hoped to be.
Oh, wow. Not as it was, but as it hoped to be.
Yes. And Jim immediately follows that up by saying, there's something to be said for that.
That's beautiful.
He isn't claiming that the era was flawless, or that real life functioned neatly, like a sitcom episode where everything wraps up in 30 minutes. He is recognizing that television in that era functioned as a shared cultural aspiration.
Right.
It was a projection of decency, of order,
yeah,
of community values. People tuned in not because it was a gritty, realistic documentary of their daily struggles, but because it provided a model of how people wanted to treat each other.
That completely changes the framing of why we watch what we watch. It's not about being naive or ignoring reality. It's about wanting to spend an hour of your evening in a world where things make moral sense.
Exactly.
Where the good guy eventually wins, where neighbors instinctively help neighbors, where problems are actually solvable.
Right, because real life isn't always like that.
Exactly. When you spend your entire day out in the real world dealing with chaos, economic stress, and moral ambiguity, you don't necessarily want your entertainment to reflect that exact same chaos back at you in 4K resolution. You want a psychological breather.
You are actively seeking out an emotional refuge. And what Grandpa Jim's diligent investigation proves is that this refuge still exists.
It's still out there.
The wholesome, orderly television isn't gone forever.
Hmm.
The streaming algorithms have just buried it beneath a mountain of gritty reboots, true crime documentaries, and anxiety-inducing limited series.
But now you have the map to dig it out. So to wrap up this deep dive for you, Grandpa Jim has proven that for $25 a month, or honestly, for completely free if you don't mind grabbing a bowl of ice cream during the commercial breaks,
right,
you can still invite the classics into your living room. You can have Andy Griffith, Matt Dillon, Perry Mason, Beaver Cleaver, Cary Grant, and John Wayne over for the evening. As Jim notes, they've been waiting patiently in the archives. You just need to know how to navigate the menus and find the right remote.
It's a wonderful, comforting thought to end on. But Jim's thesis also leaves us with a rather challenging question to consider about our own era of media consumption.
Let's hear it.
If classic television from the mid-20th century represented the world, not as it was, but as it hoped to be, orderly, polite, and morally clear.
Right.
What does our current cultural obsession with morally gray, apocalyptic, and deeply dystopian television say about what we collectively expect our future to be?
Oh, wow.
Is the entertainment we stream today just a dark mirror of our current reality? Or is it actually a detailed map of our deepest unarticulated anxieties?
That is a fascinating question. Are we streaming our aspirations or are we binge watching our fears? Something for you to mull over the next time you find yourself staring at that endless scrolling menu. Until next time, keep digging deeper.